Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
It is one of humanity's enduring mysteries why some individuals rise from unpromising origins to great heights when so many others facing similar obstacles and with seemingly similar capabilities do not rise at all. Furthermore, why do some cultural groups seem to consistently outperform others? The subject is tackled in the new book, The Triple Package, by Amy Chua and Jed Rubenfeld, and it's a great pleasure to welcome them to the program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Full title of the book, The Triple Package, How Three Unlikely Traits Explain the Rise and Fall of Cultural Groups in America. Jed, what brought you to this subject?
Well, you know, we all know it's a tough economy and rising inequality out there, but it turns out, and this is what we found, that there's this remarkable fact that some groups are doing better. They're outperforming the rest of the country in terms of upward mobility. Their kids, their members, it's just striking. And we went out and we documented which groups these were, and then we asked ourselves the question: do they have anything in common? Is there some cultural traits they share? Because you know what? It is cultural. It's not genetic. It's not biological. We show, first of all, that there are African-American and Hispanic-American groups that are among the most successful. But more important than that, we show that the group success fades over time. So like Asian-American kids who are doing so well educationally right now, third-generation Asian-American kids do not outperform the rest of the country educationally, and that proves it's not biological. It's not innate. Something going on in the cultures, in the families of those kids. And ultimately, our book is not about groups. It's about individuals, because the idea is if we can figure out what's going on, if we can figure out the formula, we can all learn from it.
So with that said, Amy, what do you consider the triple package to be?
The triple package are three qualities that in combination just kind of propel individuals and some groups to disproportionate success. The first element is a sense of exceptionality. You know, you are destined for great things. You're special. The second is kind of surprising. It's with that sense of exceptionality, you also need a dash of insecurity. That is, you are not quite good enough yet. You still need to prove yourself. You haven't done enough yet. And the third element of the triple package is impulse control. Self-discipline, the ability to resist temptation. And anyone of any background can have these three qualities. In fact, I think if you try to imagine just like the most successful and driven people you know, you'll see these three qualities. Like Steve Jobs is a great example. But at this moment in time, some groups are instilling these three qualities in their members, in their families, and their children more than the rest of America, and they are doing disproportionately well. And those groups will change over time. But our thought was, you know, let's study this and see, you know, if we can make it accessible to anyone who wants it.
So, Jed, when you say that the book is more about people and less about groups, you certainly do talk about groups, as Amy just did, and talk about the rise and fall of cultural groups. And it is telling in the book that when you look at it, that eight cultural groups, including Jews and Nigerians and the Chinese, are poised for global success because their cultures possess certain specific traits. So there is an individual quality to that, but it is ultimately about the groups.
No, I wouldn't say that at all, because you know what? It's the traits that remain constant. You know, 100 years ago, Italian-Americans, Irish-Americans, 30 years ago, Greek-Americans. The groups that are succeeding in America at any given time change. It's the qualities that are propelling their success that stay constant. So the book is about these qualities, but in any family, a parent, a strong grandparent, a teacher can instill these qualities. It's all about families. It's all about individuals in the end, not the groups.
One great example that we talk about is Justice Sonia Sotomayor of the Supreme Court. She was born to a Puerto Rican family struggling, so not from one of these groups. Her father was an alcoholic, and her mother was not around for this. Yet she had one grandmother that she wrote about who just instilled the sense of exceptionality in her. I believe in you. You are going to be destined for great things. plenty of insecurity in her life. But for impulse control, she tells this amazing story when she was in fifth grade. She was not a good student. She went to the best student in her class and said, "How do you study? What's the trick? What do you do?" And so she kind of taught it to herself, and the rest is history. I mean, she went to Princeton. She's just a huge role model. So it is, these qualities are accessible. Of course, it's harder for some people than others. You know, it's not, some people have a steeper hill to climb, but they are definitely individually accessible qualities.
Let us go to the core of this and the three successful traits that you identify, superiority complex, inferiority complex, and self-control or impulse control. How did you come to these three?
Well, you know, it just hits you in the face when you... So the first thing we did is we identified which groups were so strikingly successful, very rigorous, data-driven in that way. Then we asked, are there things that these groups have in common? And we didn't expect to find this, but it just was extraordinary. So, like Mormons, they who are just so enjoying so much business success right now, they have this sense of exceptionality. It's defining of their group. They and it has a religious and a source for them, and also a sense that their way of life is better. But at the same time, they feel not fully accepted in America. They think Americans, think they're a little weird or maybe not Christian, and they want to prove themselves, and Mormons will tell you this, they want to prove that they can succeed in the American way to show that their way of life is good, and at the same time, they have, massive habits of impulse control. So, by the time Mormon kids are 13 to 16, they're doing less drugs, they have less, teen sex, they don't even drink coffee and alcohol, so these traits jumped off the page at us when we started looking at these groups because all of the groups shared them.
There's also a strong support in just like kind of like intuition. So many people have said, everybody knows this in sports. When you have a sports team, that the winning team, the winning player is often the person who thinks, I can be number one. I know I'm the best, but there's a little bit of that underdog quality. I'm smaller than everybody else. I didn't get picked first. And that underdog drive, coupled with, working extra hard, that impulse control, consistently seems to be a winning formula.
One of the controversies surrounding the book, and that is the fact that much of the criticism comes in an ignoring of the civil rights fights that have taken place to level that very playing field and to make it fair for all.
Yeah, I've heard this. I don't understand it. I got to say, I don't think those people read our book. We of course the playing field isn't level. Every effort to level the playing field in America is a triumph, and we are not close to that point yet. America needs to change. We need to try to end discrimination. We need to try to level the playing field even more. But at the same time, what does that have to do with what we're saying? We're saying let's look at the groups that are doing well and let's see if some behaviors are helping those kids and members of that group succeed. And boy, it's just common sense that behaviors help people succeed. I mean, are we at a point where you can't say the following? Asian American kids are doing well academically in part because their study habits are different. If you can't say that without being accused of like stereotyping or racism, when it's just a fact and it's common sense, then that means we're tying our hands behind our back and we're not giving people the full information. We're not telling people how they can, have an effect on their own lives.
Interestingly, though, there has been great criticism from fellow Asian Americans, Amy, about how you define success.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I think, unfortunately, that a lot of people who are doing the criticizing actually haven't read the book because half the book is about the sort of the narrowness that these first-generation immigrants often impose on their children. They say, because we're so afraid of survival, we're so afraid that you won't make it, we want you to be these very conventional things. Like you have to be a doctor or a physicist or a lawyer, and you can't be, a singer or a poet or a yoga teacher. And we treat that actually as a criticism, and we say that one of the beauties of America is when you get that first-generation drive, the parents of, immigrant parents instilling this ethic and kind of a hunger in you, and yet the second generation then rebels against their parents. They say, you know what? in America, we are seeing this norm of equality, which is, we don't like this exceptionality from, you know, ethnic heritage. We want to intermarry. We also don't want to be the professions that you want us to be. And that's this dynamism that it's not just in Asian Americans, that we've seen this in generation of immigrants from the German Americans, Polish Americans. It's like the first generation is very anxious financially. We want stable careers. And then as you get more comfortable, you get creativity and bursts of innovation and rebellion. So, you know, that's, if they read the book, I think that they would see that.
Well, you know, I read the book, and I understand what you're saying, although it does seem to me that there is, I understand the argument that many make in that it can cause a rift and perhaps even more distance and conflict between groups, and ultimately, in pointing this out, is it ultimately productive?
Well, you know, it's a great question. It's a fair question. But in my mind, you can't change facts by calling facts racist. You can't change facts by hiding your head in the sand and ignoring them. The only way we're going to change the facts, and I'm talking about the only way we're going to change problems of inequality and group inequality in this country, is by facing the facts, understanding the sources of them, getting behind them, and then trying to change them. You know, people say to us, you know, you can't go around saying how some groups are doing better than others without implying some groups are better than others. Just not true. I mean, if we can't cite a U.S. Census statistic about how groups are doing, and that's where this information is coming from the U.S. Census, without being accused of stereotyping or racism, we're in big trouble as a country.
The name of the book, The Triple Package, by Amy Chua and Jed Rubenfeld. It is published by Viking. Amy and Jed, thank you very much for being with us. I do appreciate it. Again, the title of the book, The Triple Package, How Three Unlikely Traits Explain the Rise and Fall of Cultural Groups in America. It is published by the Penguin Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.